If it's 6 p.m. on a Thursday, that means it's time for Lehigh Valley Discourse here on WDIY 88.1 FM, WDIY.org, and our WDIY app. And we start off with Perspectives with John Pierce. My guest is going to be James Higgins, who is professor at Rider University. Jim, I'm thinking Rider College. Did it used to be?
I think it was a college, but by the time I became involved with them, they were already a fully fledged university.
And so Dr. Higgins, education, he has a PhD from Lehigh University, and his fields are urban and labor history and history of medicine, African-American history, science and technology, urban and medical, progressive era politics, and public health reform. Jim, remind us what the progressive era was.
Progressive era was a period, it's variously defined. I take a rather wide view and I cast the net as far as the early 1890s through the early 1920s. Really, the World War I era is the end of it.
Before the fun times of the 20s.
Yes, just before the fun times of the 20s and the terrible times of the 30s. Yeah. And it's an era where people begin to apply technology to solve some of society's ills. There are associated political reforms, anti-corruption, anti-graft, but I concentrate on the public health and medical ends of the progressive spectrum.
That's for your study at Lehigh University. Before that, you have a Master of Arts in History from Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, and a Bachelor of Arts before that at St. Vincent College. I did it backwards here today.
Well, that's okay.
From La Trobe. Reminds me of Arnold Palmer.
Arnold Palmer and Rolling Rock Beer. We can't forget that. Yes. Oui. A lot comes out of La Trobe.
Okay. And not that you consumed very much of that while you were an undergraduate?
No, not at all. Not at all. Straight and narrow.
Someday I'm going to get Jim to tell the truth. Now, Jim has written one book that's been published already, and that is The Health of the Commonwealth, A Brief History of Medicine, Public Health, and Disease in Pennsylvania from 1681 to the present, Temple University Press, and that's from 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have another book coming out.
Right.
Tell us about that one.
It's forthcoming. It should be out in March. That's the assigned date from the Penn State Press. And it's entitled A Long Stretch of Darkness. And it is a biography of Dr. Samuel Gibson Dixon, who's the first commissioner of health of the state of Pennsylvania. He's also a man who sets up the largest tuberculosis treatment system conceived anywhere in the world, including three large sanitaria here in Pennsylvania, one out in Hamburg in Berks County, and one in Palo Alto, and one in Crescent. And so tens of thousands of people were under care at any one time by the state between 1906 and the 1920s. And he also gains fame in the 1890s. He competes with Robert Koch, who is generally assigned credit for connecting bacteria with disease in people in 1882. And they're both working on serums to defeat tuberculosis in the body. Koch comes up with tuberculin. It's still used today to help diagnose whether one's been exposed to the microbe or not. But he doesn't credit Gibson with two prior breakthroughs. And so there's a transatlantic fight between them. Scientific societies get involved and the governments get involved. And he has to make a trip to Berlin to sit down with the famed Dr. Koch and work this out. He doesn't get any credit really for his serum development. And this book helps to correct that misunderstanding.
Right. Well, you have some drama going on.
We do.
With a historian.
Yes.
That is great stuff. Well, today, Dr. Higgins is going to talk to us about the history of newspapers in the Lehigh Valley. So we're switching topic here from what we were just talking about, because Jim does a lot with medicine in his studies and in his teaching. So as far as newspapers are concerned, let's go back as far as we can. What would be the very first newspaper that you uncovered in the Lehigh Valley?
We've got a few that are published at the turn of the 19th century in Lehigh County. And some of these are published even before the county is separated from Northampton. But the Frieden's Boot and some other Ableton German names that I simply can't pronounce very well are existent and wink in and out of existence, most of them in just a few months or a few years.
Were these written in German?
Most of these are written in German, yeah. So they're written in German, published for a largely German consumption public. Germans had a relatively high rate of literacy for the period. Pennsylvania had a high rate of literacy for the period. The Germans emphasized that. And so there's a reading public, even in rural Lehigh County, well over 200 years ago.
So does that mean that the first newspapers in the Lehigh Valley were in German?
They're in German.
Before we had any in English?
Sure. In fact, men like Benjamin Franklin are going to complain in the mid and late 1700s that their colony is being taken over by foreigners who don't even speak English. And, you know, it's ironic, I guess, that this man who will then help spearhead an effort to break off from a mother country.
Yeah.
Has this problem with these people coming in from another country. They're not speaking English. It's not even kind of classic German. It's an amalgamation. And especially the Germans, you know, they get under his skin and they get under the skin of some other prominent colonists.
Wow. So how long were the lives of the early newspapers?
Most of them don't exceed 3 to 5 years. So because they don't exist very long, and because the records of them are relatively scanty. So you're lucky if you can find one or two editions of them. Why they start, we can probably guess why they decline and die: lack of readership, financial problems. But they're there to show not just news within the community. They're keeping a tempo on the lives of these rural inhabitants of what has only a generation earlier, when the earliest newspapers come out, a generation earlier, this had been the frontier. And so it really is a peek into a different world.
Yes. What sort of items did these papers print?
So a lot of it, and it should come as no surprise, because they're rural papers. Most of their items have to deal with the tempo of life, harvests. Harvests filled these papers. And right through the early 20th century, what is going on in the farmland around Allentown or around Bethlehem, if we're looking at the larger Lehigh Valley, fills a considerable portion of these newspapers. It's grain prices, it's the price of potatoes, the price of land for farming. There are periods when land declines in price and the newspapers discuss it because they know it can mean trouble for their rural readership and for the county as a whole. I mean, Allentown spends much of its history as a kind of overgrown market town. And while Bethlehem's industrializing, Allentown still has most of its eyes front and center on small merchants and agricultural produce and sales.
Yeah, that's real interesting.
Yeah, and this is a time before we have county coroners. And so if you're interested in something like genealogy, or if you're taking yourself back 200 years and you're interested in the lives of your neighbors, and this is how you find out when births occur, who's sick, who's getting better, who's about to die, who's being buried, who's having a birthday, who's getting married. They fill in a lot of what is done now by social media, the telephone, texting. I mean, this is a way to keep the community together. They're not generally published on a daily basis. They're published every week, every other week, when news items collect and they finally have an issue to put out. And it's one way that people in a very rural area who have their feet or a wagon to carry them from point to point on rocky, pitted roads, it's a way for these people to keep in touch with one another.
Wow. And so the frequency of publication was even not every Wednesday you're going to get a paper or every Sunday or
right.
That. It's just whenever they had enough to print.
Sure. And, you know, we call them newspapers, but you wouldn't recognize them today as a newspaper. The Gazette, which is a form of what we today would call a newspaper, is usually a one or two broadsided sheet. And that's your newspaper. That's it. And that gives you the news of the county. Not much news about the international or national news in these early days. There's not even too much news about the state. It is very localized. That's what people care about.
When you did your research on these newspapers, you had to learn some German, I guess.
I didn't have to learn German. I have people who at the Historical Society knew a bit of German. People who know German or have an interest in Pennsylvania Dutch are always happy to help you. But no, I remain terribly ignorant of the German language. I really do.
Yeah, speaking of items that would be in the newspaper, I remember my father telling me that down south, now we're talking Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
and again, it was probably more rural than urban, in the they would have in their little newspaper, maybe 4 pages or so, that the family of Jim Jones came to visit for Easter, and they all had a good time and so on. Was that kind of thing you would find?
Around, you know, it's interesting because, so by the second decade of the 20th century, Allentown has 60,000 people living in it. But the Lehigh County of today doesn't exist. And so when you step outside of the boundaries of Allentown, you move very rapidly to the rural, right? So when Muhlenberg College first changes its campus out to the west end of Allentown, it's not surrounded by housing. It's surrounded by farmers' fields and woods. And it's the fairgrounds marking the edge of the western side of Allentown. And after that, you're into farmers' fields and you're into copses of woods and what becomes Trexler Park. And yet, even with the city at around 60,000, those items are daily in the Morning Call, the Allentown Democrat, and the Allentown Leader. And often it's almost a kind of a clause, not even quite a sentence. You know, Joe Smith and his family are motoring to Albertus. They're not motoring anywhere far or exotic. They're going to Albertus, the other end of the county. But it's a news item, and there's some space, so you might as well put it in. Yeah.
It's filler.
Yeah. Small stories about card games being played, a 4-year-old's birthday is being thrown. This all makes it into the newspaper.
So newspapers in the old days is what we're talking about here on Perspectives with Dr. James Higgins. Jim, why are local newspapers important to a historian?
So if we believe that newspapers offer the first draft of history, and it's often a very rough draft filled with mistakes, but it is a draft nonetheless, then the newspapers, where many historians, myself included, go to just get a narrative, just to understand what is going on surrounding some sort of event or person. And the newspapers offer clues. If you're trying to understand one story, I'm working on an epidemic up in Luzerne County right now that happened in 1885. And the local newspaper of a town called Plymouth offers the personal stories and the nuances that even papers published right outside of Plymouth in a larger community like Wilkes-Barre or Scranton can't offer, because they're more concerned, as they should be, with Wilkes-Barre and Scranton. And a lot of your small towns, because you don't have access, forget the internet, you don't have access to radio. So how are you getting your news? Well, it allows for these publishers to come in, and some of them are almost itinerant publishers. They're not from the towns where these newspapers are published. And they get some money, they get a couple of reporters, and they start printing their newspaper. And so what are they printing in these once-a-week newspapers? Well, they're going around the small town collecting stories. Sometimes it's just by word of mouth. And so it gives you that insight. You also have the same sort of thing, you know, going on today, where a newspaper and the reporters, when a newspaper is acting in the best tradition of journalism, then they will print regardless of who it's going to harm, right? So you've got a story, and it may harm this politician, it may harm this appointed leader, it may harm this big business person, it may harm this group. But if it's the truth and you decide, or your editor decides, it's newsworthy, you put it out there. And so in my research concerning the 1918 flu, even in scholarly publications, historians who don't look at the newspaper will take a health department's or a health board's reports on face value. And they say, okay, in the case of Pittsburgh, well, we're doing school closures, and we're doing crowd bans, and we're setting up an emergency hospital. Okay, and you track it with the 5 newspapers in Pittsburgh at the time.
Let's hold that we have to take a break right now, Jim. And we'll continue talking with Dr. James Higgins about the beginnings of newspapers here in the Lehigh Valley. Perspectives with John Pierce, and our engineer is James Zabrot. Be back in just a moment.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
And we're back here on Perspectives. Our topic, newspapers in the old days. And Dr. James Higgins is telling us about the beginnings. And one thing that I learned already, Jim, every time I'm with Jim, I learn something. And one thing that I learned right now was that we had newspapers in German in the Lehigh Valley before we had them in English.
Right.
And another interesting point is that if we saw those really early newspapers, and we're talking the end of the 19th century, we wouldn't recognize them really as newspapers.
Mm-mm. No.
Sort of gossip sheets.
Gossip sheets and just local news.
Pamphlets.
Yep.
Right. Okay. And then one of your areas of interest has been the pandemic of 1918.
Yes.
And especially around the Pittsburgh area. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about that.
So when historians are looking just at government documents, there is a tendency in some of these locations, and Pittsburgh is one of them in the early 20th century, they've got a kind of an ironclad political machine. And whatever they do, in many ways, is based on preserving and growing the power of that machine. And so they won't shut down during the flu pandemic. It's essentially the largest city in the country that makes almost no official response. So in their Board of Health meeting minutes and records, they discuss what they're doing, and they're kind of putting their best face on the effort that they're putting in to stop the flu and treat the victims. The reality is that newspapers are reporting, look, we're a city of 600,000 people, and you have now, 3 weeks into this epidemic, set up exactly two emergency hospitals with a combined capacity of about 200 beds. And you have not mobilized nurses. You are not shutting down firehouses for people to sleep in like you're telling the public you're supposed to be doing and that you are doing. And so you can take these newspapers and compare what they're telling people at the time with what the government's telling people at the time as well.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So the importance of newspapers as we look at history. Why are local papers important for people who wish to understand the history of their community or family?
So with the advent of websites like newspapers.com, the newspaper across the country, they've expanded their service to about a dozen different countries. They have hundreds of newspapers going right back to the 18th century. For a small fee, and I know this sounds like a prompt to go join newspapers.com or an affiliated group, but
okay.
For a small fee, you have access to hundreds of papers. So when I began researching professionally 20 years ago, I would hop in my car and I would plan a weekend in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I went to school there, as you said, but did research in Pittsburgh and still continue to do it to this day. And it was, you know, I had to weigh what was cheaper for a graduate student. If I called out to the library at University of Pittsburgh, had them do the research for me, print out copies, and then mail them to me, it would cost several hundred dollars. Or I could hop in my car and pay several hundred dollars for food, gas, tolls, a hotel room, and copying in the library itself. Now you don't have to do it. Almost any newspaper of any import in the country is going to be on a site like newspapers.com. And it's searchable. So instead of going through microfilm, just page by page, you know, you could spend an entire day going through just a couple of weeks worth of newspapers when you're looking for small items. If you want to know about your family and not just through census records, if you're interested in genealogy, a newspaper search is a way for you to plug in what your relatives are doing 100, 150, 200 years ago. When I urge people to research in this way, if they're interested in genealogy, you find out things about your family. Many of them are good. Some of them maybe not so good. It's what the newspaper just reports what's going on. If you're interested in your community, a small community like Allentown or Bethlehem, your national and international press is going to have little or nothing to discuss about those communities unless it's in the context, say, of Bethlehem Steel or Mack Trucks, that's where your local newspaper comes in. That's what allows you to develop an idea of what the rhythm of life was before you were born, before your parents or your grandparents were born.
Rhythm of life. I like the term. Newspapers.com.
Yes.
Is the place.
Yep.
And there's a fee connected to that.
Right. It's a low monthly fee. It might be under $10.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are the pitfalls of using local papers as sources for historical research?
One thing I thought would be interesting to address today, I think we've entered an age where many people look at media with a distrusting view, whether it's the television news or newspapers. They're too liberal, they're too conservative, what have you. The reality is newspapers were generally founded by people with a decided view of something. So you have newspapers that wink in and out of existence over freedom for slaves or the continuation of slavery. The gold standard, free soil, slave soil. It's important to note that there isn't some magic moment in history where people were more virtuous than they are today. And that includes the media. Newspapers will take a slant because the publisher or the editor wishes to have that sort of slant. If you've got a newspaper that's completely in step with its community, I found from living in different places, it may mean that it is a total reflection of the politics of that community, where there's no complaining because they're in lockstep. And of course, people who read what they preconceive to be the truth will agree with it. Well, this is telling me what I want to know about, and this is telling me in a way that I agree. But if you go back to the newspapers of the 19th century, you can get right down to Labor and Capital, where newspapers have a decided view on unions, they have a decided view on private property, and that is the position that they expound in their pages.
And so they're not trying to give as many views as possible.
Right, right. This, I mean, diversity is a relatively new word when applied to the United States as a whole and letting as many different people from as many different backgrounds have a seat at the table. No one's discussing diversity in media 120, 130, 140 years ago. Diversity in media meant that you had newspapers that catered generally to a white audience, and then you had some smaller newspapers that catered to an African-American audience. That's a sort of diversity, but your editor's room, your newsroom is not there generally until relatively recently trying to pull in all of these different perspectives. Witness the infighting in the media surrounding the civil rights era. Media evolves with the people who read it, the people who write it. It evolves with the nation. So it shouldn't be shocking when you are reading a newspaper from, say, the southern United States, as I did for a number of years researching in the South, where the language that's being used is inflammatory. But it's not considered inflammatory to those who are writing it or those who are reading it. It's just how they express themselves. For us today, it's shocking. It's horrifying. But the nostalgia that people view the past with infects the way that they view the present. And we're not living in the most unvirtuous time in American history where you can't trust the media. There are different faces and different names, but these things have been going on for a very long time. So when you're reading any document, whether it's a newspaper or a report or an article or a book, you have to understand it's not going to be completely objective. Completely objective is something that it is impossible to attain. The writers have the weight of their experience pressing down on them. What you do is you acknowledge it and you correct for it.
And so do you find radically different perspectives among different local papers for the same news item, or do the papers generally track with one another?
If we look at the three great papers of Allentown in the late 19th, early 20th century, the Democrat, the Leader, and the Morning Call, there are especially political items that one newspaper will carry in an inch square box and another will have a blaring headline about it. For instance, in the early 20th century, by the second decade of the 20th century, Allentown was more and more at the voting booth turning to socialist politicians. And in some of these elections, socialists are coming in like number two for mayor. And in the Morning Call, this causes great consternation. The Allentown Democrat, I believe it is, not only thinks this is a good idea, but they openly accuse a sitting Lehigh County judge
apropos seemingly of nothing, of the charge of sexual assault. And these newspapers start to fight with one another about whether this is an accurate claim, whether this is just politically inflammatory behavior, whether the journalists and the editors are acting responsibly. And so they're lining up on different sides of political issues. And this is great for business because these blaring headlines get people wanting, I mean, today you click on clickbait, right? You're doing it for advertising dollars, whether you realize that's the reason why you're clicking on this, you know, this blaring headline, you know, dog born with three heads. Oh, well, I've got to click on that. These same headlines are making the pages of newspapers 100 years ago. It's there for you, the consumer, to look at that headline and say, oh my goodness, what is going on in Allentown? I've got to buy this edition, and I've got to buy the evening edition too, and I should probably buy this edition of this newspaper as well. It drums up dollars. It drums up readership.
Right. And the more dramatic,
the better.
Yeah.
Yep. The better.
If it bleeds, it leads.
It leads. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go for newspapers.
And the written descriptions of things like accidents, murders, they are far more brutal 100, 120 years ago than you would ever print in the newspaper today. You just wouldn't do it. I mean, step by step, people being torn apart in mills, people being burned, and the newspaper, the hideous burn of, you know, Jake Smith as he's pulled out of the iron forge, you know, his tattered leg hanging, and they get into it. They get into it because it draws readership.
Wow. All right. So getting into a little bit of what human nature is all about. So some of the newspapers that you've used in your research?
Well, an awful lot. In local news, the Allentown Morning Call, Democrat and Leader, and the Globe Times have been critical to my research in this area with respect to the flu. Those newspapers and the Reading Eagle have been critical, looking at wider questions of local health care, you know, powwowing, Pennsylvania Dutch, a mixture of religion and folklore, and even pre-Christian incantations and rituals to heal people. This is still current in our area into the 20th century.
So you're talking about 1918, 1920?
1920, 1910, 1900. But in Pittsburgh, along with the Pittsburgh Post and the Pittsburgh Gazette, the Times, the Courier, and in Philadelphia, you've got a dozen you can choose from. Again, made much more easier by newspapers.com. It's not that long ago that you had to make a stop at Penn, and you had to make a stop at Drexel and Villanova, and then the Free Library. You had to go to all of these places to do it. Now it's one-stop shop.
Well, Jim, nowadays with newspapers going electronic, as they, I guess, have forced to do, I still am old-fashioned. Mm-hmm. I want to have a newspaper that's actually paper in my hands and not scroll on a screen.
Yes, so I feel the same way. I just don't practice it as well as you. So I'm a newspaper carrier from way, way back in the early and mid-1990s. And I love the feel of a newspaper. But I order my newspapers online. I'm one of those guys. So I scroll it. I like the feel of a book as well. And I always read paper copy books, hard copy books. But I think the newspapers will mostly tell you themselves, this is where it's headed. This is where it's going. I spoke to one circulation editor a couple of years ago who said, we actually don't like the people who are ordering paper copies. It actually makes more economic sense for us for you just to order it electronically. Oh. And that was one editor's take on it. Oh. Yeah, it's headed there. It's headed there.
This is Dr. James Higgins, my guest this evening. Jim, our time is up.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir, and we appreciate your coming over again here to WDIY. This is Jim's second or third appearance with us on Lehigh Valley Discourse, and it's always fun to have him. So our topic this evening was the history of newspapers in the Lehigh Valley. It's time for us to take our leave. Thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Thanks to James Zibrot for working the board for us. I'm John Pierce, your host. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor. Stay tuned now for more Lehigh Valley Discourse.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to the WDIY website or app to share or become a WDIY member.